I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, the 2014 NFL Draft intrigue continues at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And tonight you are in for a real treat as we've invited back one of the very best NFL analysts in the business. And that is one thing that I love about Sean Salisbury is that when I listen to him on YSR each and every day, I always learn something new. I know he's versatile on the air. He can talk about the NBA and all different types of subjects, but I always learn something about the game of football. Sean, it's such a pleasure to have you back with us.
It's great to be back with you. Thank you for that compliment. I actually am a bigger baseball and basketball fan than football, so try to take a little pride in it. But I always love being on. And you know what's interesting? My first few weeks at ESPN, when I first started there on television, The big boss, you know, you're scared to death. Like, how do I fit in with this? And I remember the big boss walked up to me, and he looked, put his arm around me, and he said, "You're going to be great here." He said, "Just tell us something we don't know." And that was his advice. It wasn't some big speech. He said, "Just tell me something I don't know." And I took that to heart to learn how to try and learn how to not talk over somebody. I mean, meaning, you know, somebody who's an amateur or doesn't know the sport and talk down to them, and then somebody who's really good at it, not talk below them. So there's a fine line, and I'm still working on it, but I appreciate that. It's trying to tell somebody something they don't know this day and age with the internet's hard to do.
Well, you and John Granato do a great job on Prime Cut. We need to give a plug out there. Of course, you can listen each and every day, Monday through Friday, from 4 to 8 Eastern Time at Yahoo Sports Radio. So take me back. In fact, you were an All-American, high school basketball player, is that
sure
right?
Sure was.
You were. But take us back to your draft day memory, since this has been such a big and an exciting past 24, 48 hours. What were some of those memories like for you in 86?
I promise the fish story doesn't get bigger. This is what happened. I remember when I came out at SC, I was the most, I guess I'll pat, I don't get to compliment myself much, so I'll brag, The humble brag, right? No. I was the heavily recruited quarterback coming out of high school. And I can remember it was a draft expert. It was either Joel Buschbaum or Mel Kiper. They kind of slot you 4 years before, you know, who the best freshman, what will he project? I mean, they did back then. And I remember they had me projected when I came out of high school to go that 3 years from now I was going to be the first pick of the draft, big and could run and all that. And so I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. Well, two injuries later and blown out knee and played my whole career without an anterior cruciate ligament, I can remember preparing for that draft day. And I went to the combine. I threw the ball well, but I still wasn't fully healthy. And I put, you know, Jim Everett and Robbie Bosco, all the guys were there, and I said, you know what, there's not many that throwing it better. But I knew that I wasn't going to get taken where I had planned 4 years ago. But I'd worked at it, and then draft came, and I was with my family, and that was when we had 12 rounds, and you woke up early at 5:04 in the morning on Saturday, and it was one day, and it lasted all day. Well, 7, 8, 9 round. I thought around the fifth round that the Rams had a quarterback to pick, and John Robinson was my coach for the first 2 years at SC. They took Stan Gelbaugh. And my heart jumped into my stomach, and I thought, okay. And I can remember going to bed with tears that night. I consider myself tough, but that night it kind of beat me down. I was 11 of my teammates had been drafted at SC. I'll never forget laying on the couch, and my best friend and hero, my father, who's as tough as man as I know, he walks in there, and he said, "I'm sorry." He said, "But tomorrow you're getting your ass off that couch, and you're going to wake up, and you're going to drive back to USC." I was down in San Diego, my hometown. He goes, "You're going to drive back. You're going to walk in that rate room, and you're going to congratulate all your buddies. And you're going to walk in there proud. You're going to put your shoulders back." He's a military guy. "And you're going to stick your chest out. And you're going to prove to the world that you're going to go play football." And he said, "Get up and go." And I did. I signed a contract, a free agent contract with the Seahawks. 10 years later, I'd lasted 10 years in the league. And I was a sixth quarterback in camp. They had drafted one, had brought Paul McDonald in, who was a veteran, had Gail Gilbert, David Craig, brought another kid in. And my father's – I was going to quit football that day because of the drive. I was going to quit. And my dad said, "No. You're going to prove to the world exactly who you are and what you're about. It's the first big adversity you've faced other than the injuries. You're going to go prove it." And I got out of bed to this day. I miss my dad because he was proud after that because I found out about myself. But that was a very, very difficult day. And this is going to change lives. You know, the draft, obviously, yesterday, the first round, but as a second, third, and all these rounds roll through, lives are changed, good and bad. So it was a miserable day for me. It's bittersweet feelings, but it also gave me a chance to find something out about myself that I didn't know.
Sean, you know, would you talk about the popularity of the draft and just how far it has come? I mean, it is the biggest non-sporting event. Why has it grown so much and the fascination with it?
It's a made for, you know, and they want to add a fourth day. Please don't. I'll throw it in my mouth if they add a fourth day. You know what? It is... It's become such a great made-for-TV event, like anything. The Combine, I mean, come on. We didn't have it on TV when I was coming to the Combine. It was in New Orleans at the time. They rotated a little bit. It was in New Orleans, and we'd go out there and do it and had a blast. But you had to hear about it from talking to coaches and the rest. It wasn't on TV. But, hey, it's the way things have gone. You're going to, with the information highway and everything we're doing now, from Twitter to TV, it's just a great made-for-TV event, and we've built the drama up with the guy, you know, getting one guy who there, you know there's controversy around who's not going to get drafted where he wants, and it's a great deal. I think it drags a little much, but you know what? We've got every expert mock draft in the world. Only in football can you tell a guy he's great on Tuesday, and then he goes out in a pair of shorts and works out in the offseason 6 days later, and all of a sudden now you've dropped him or raised him 17 picks in your draft because he played in a pair of shorts. So I don't understand it. I don't like it, that part of it. But I do understand the made-for-TV and the fodder that it gives us for radio shows. And it, you know what? It's good, and it's great for the kids. I mean, that's filtered down into college, you know, and it's filtered down all the way into high school with all the high school games on TV and when a guy's picking his hat to sign. So it's kids in junior high are getting scholarships, so it only makes sense that we put the draft on TV for 47 days.
Our very own Sean Salisbury of Yahoo Sports Radio is working after hours with the Big E right here at YSR. So this year, the fascination with the draft, there's so much depth. Who is your man crush on?
You know what, Mike? I think the best football player in the draft, and people are going to see on Sundays after you do, you know, you just saw him get drafted yesterday, is Sammy Watkins. Mm. This is, I mean, I know Clowney is going to be, he's got all the potential. There's some guys with some risk factor, but Manziel will get his, and was obviously a deep quarterback class as witnessed. But I think, to me, Jake Matthews is going to be playing. When we're sitting here talking 10 years from now, he's still going to be playing and starting for somebody. There are some explosive players that have been picked. But for me, going into the draft, my man crush, I like Manziel's it factor, but huge Sammy Watkins fan because I need game breakers. We're in a passing world now where we throw the football in the NFL ad nauseum, and running backs have been devalued. So Sammy Watkins, who's kind of like an A.J. Green or Julio Jones, he gives you instant impact and will start from the beginning and will scare defenses. Plus, he's a special. He can return kicks, too. So I loved him going in, and I love him now. And what a bonus he's going to be on Sundays.
Okay, so you highlight Sam, but talk to some more about Johnny Manziel. I mean, how quickly can he come in, make an impact, and contribute right away, especially in the bright lights of the NFL?
Yeah, you hope that it's take a little time to get your stuff in order like Aaron Rodgers got to do, but that doesn't happen very often nowadays. We expect him to play, and then we want the result like RG3 and Luck and Russell Wilson gave us their rookie year.
Yeah.
We no longer, the bar is so high now, you can't come in and say, I'll see you in 3 years. So, you know what I love about him? That 6 days a week, you kind of wonder, okay, has Johnny studied? What's he do? But when he hits the field, there's something different. And I always say great quarterbacks do two things. They have a lot of things in common, two that stick out to me. One, they take ordinary players around them and make them extraordinary. Or they take good players and make them great. Everybody's game raises, even when you're not playing well, because you just know how to get them to play. He's always done that. He's got that it factor. Now, could he fix some mechanics and the rest of it? Would he wish he was 6'3"? Sure. But he knows he gets it. And there's a football IQ and a football sense that you have to have. That I can teach a lot of things. I can't teach that. And you can't teach, I don't coach effort and I don't coach heart. That's up to them. You either got it or you don't. And he's got that. The other thing that I love about him is when the temperature of the game and the pressure goes up and guys are choking on their own spit, he finds a way to get it done. His blood pressure goes down. And every great, I'm telling you the truth, Michael Jordan, if you took Michael Jordan's pulse with a minute to go in a game and they're down by two, I'll bet you on my life that his pulse is lower than it was when the game started. And that the great ones have that.
You know, as a parent, there's got to be some curiosity. Like, what did they do as parents to raise him that way and to be able to embrace pressure?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. If we could bottle that up and sell it, it'd be great. I was raised in a family that confidence was important, that never, you know, the never quit thing. But I don't know. And I felt like I had it for a while. Then I blew out my knee twice and I got sidetracked. But when you look at the great ones, and you do, there's an ability. And you know what? You know how people say that the greatest thing in the world is when you don't care what anybody else thinks?
Oh, right.
And I do think that's part of the, especially the superstars. because you're going to take the shot and miss. If you're worried about everybody booing you, mm-hmm. then you're not going to take that shot. So I think there's some, maybe you're born with it, maybe parents have ingrained it early in you, but the great ones have that ability to say, I don't care what you think, give me the football or give me the basketball.
Gotta love it. Sean Salisbury with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us online on Twitter at E-Radio Sports. We will be right back with much more of one of the Big E favorites, Sean Salisbury, right here at YSR. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We love hearing from you. Join us at Twitter at E-Radio Sports, and we're talking with one of the very best in the business, of course, played 10 years in the NFL, and that is our very own Sean Salisbury. So talk to me, Sean. How big of an adjustment was it for you going from college at USC, being a standout quarterback, to going to the NFL? What kind of advice would you give these rookies?
That's a great question. You know, the interesting thing is I played as a guy who was coached. I was coached by North Turner in college, which is big, and who was widely known now as maybe the best offensive coordinator we've
Minnesota.
Ever had. And Aikman swears by him. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky because mechanically he helped me. I'll tell you what, having the chip on my shoulder not being drafted was a big help when I left. But I played at such a big program. You think about think about the players I played against every day on the practice field. Chip Banks, Marcus Allen, Tim McDonald, Joey Browner, Jack Del Rio, Dwayne. I mean, it's a litany of guys that are either going to be in the Hall of Fame, or Bruce Matthews, Don Mosbar, Roy Fife. It's crazy. Mm. In my 5 years there, it's the number of great players there. So I was prepared from the practice field and playing in that conference to go into Seattle and say, you know what, I can do this. And I'll tell you what I did learn. I'm standing on the sidelines during our first minicamp, and David Craig, who's about 6 foot tall, and his uniform didn't fit well, and I never met him before. We're in our first minicamp. Rookies are there, and I see a guy throwing him where his uniform doesn't fit, his pants are baggy. And I look, I said, who's that? And he goes, that's Craig. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to start as a rookie. I'm going to beat every one of these five guys out and start. And then drills start. And David Craig goes into the 7-on-7 team mode, and he's throwing balls that you can't be. And I turn around and look. I said, oh, now I get it. Because David Craig was really a heck of a quarterback in the mm-hmm. league. And I said, don't be deceived. The size, you look at a guy and say, oh, he's not good, because they can all play. So what I learned is I played against great players in practice. But I'll tell you what I did learn is that I made sure that mentally that I never got behind. And that's the number one advice I'd give to a guy. Because like when I was in Minnesota and was a veteran, Chris Carter and I or Jim McMahon, we'd go out to dinner after the second practice. And then about the third practice, you bring a couple rookies wanted to come along. They'd stay out till 11 o'clock and weren't studying their playbook. And we put in 7, 8 passes, 3 or 4 runs every day. It's cumulative. So by about the sixth practice, the third day, we got a lot of stuff in. And these guys finally, and they go out on the field the next day because they were out with us, and say, well, how are you guys? Well, we've been in this league. We've been in the league 8 years, 9 years. You're a rookie. You should have been studying instead of hanging out with us till 11 o'clock. And then they get behind mentally. And then they drop a ball because they're mentally not focused. And then they forget a play. And before you know it, they've made 4 mental mistakes. And 3 weeks later, they get cut not because they're not physically good, because they allowed themselves mentally to get behind. My number one thing is, for every hour you spend practicing, spend 2 hours studying your playbook and you'll be okay.
Okay, as far as the mental aspect, did you already know how to compartmentalize mistakes when you took your game to the next level? Or was that something that you were still learning how to have that kind of toughness?
Constant growing and learning from it. And I remember when I got to the NFL watching Warren Moon, who was a teammate of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Warren, if he threw 5 picks or 5 interceptions, you could never tell.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't tell you're watching, you see it, but if you watched him, you'd say, what kind of games he have? And I kind of like that with my quarterback. I don't mind excitement, but you can't. The quarterback's in one position. You could throw 4 touchdowns in the first half, 1 stupid pick at the end of the game, and you become the GOAT. So now you don't get to celebrate until you take a knee at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. But it was to be able to compartmentalize and fall. I was always a focused guy and dedicated, but still the ability, we hear boos and all that, to be able to. One of the things I struggled with after I got hurt, you kind of lose a sense of like that I'm invincible, you know, that I because I'd never been like that. I felt like I could make every play. I felt like I was the best player in the world. Not arrogant, but that's just the way you got to think of that position. I remember when I got hurt, I lost a little edge. And so I started to, you start to get to a point where you start to grind a little more, and then an incompletion. My biggest problem, aside from the injury, why I believe that I wasn't a star at the next level, and this is the truth, is that I couldn't get over a bad play fast enough late in my career. In high school, it didn't matter. I knew I could dime. But then you start to question yourself. I can't move like I used to with mm-hmm. these 2 knee surgeries. And you start to change a few things and the compartmentalization of being able to say, oh, who cares about that? I'm going to get the next one. Got to the point, and I'm telling you, it took me. And then at the end of my career, when I finally discovered it, physically I wasn't able to do it anymore, is that I couldn't get over a bad play quick enough. I let it fester 3 plays, and finally, not all the time, but sometimes, the great ones don't. The great ones can compare. I said, I don't know, who cares? That's 1 pick. The guy in the stands ain't throwing this thing, so I don't care what he thinks. And And it was tough, and I never want to let my teammates down, but it is very difficult. But if you will stay mentally focused, emotionally, you become a better player.
Okay, our very own Sean Salisbury joining us at Yahoo Sports Radio this evening on the Big E Sports Show. One guy I want to ask you about, since we're going to set aside for a moment this year's draft, Russell Wilson, did you anticipate that he would have such incredible success at such a young age?
You know what, and this is not after the fact, you know, it's always hindsight. No, I when he was at Wisconsin, I watched every throw he made. And his leader, there was a poise about him. I said, I'm going to tell you something. The steal of the draft is going to be Russell Wilson. I said that. I said it on Total College Sports Network. And I said, I'm going to tell you why. Because he understands his weaknesses. He understands he's shorter, and he understands he's got great leadership skills. Mm-hmm. He has the Warren Moon in him, where you never see him change his personality. And I was watching Wisconsin. I said, there's something different about him now. I never thought they had Matt Flynn there. I never thought he was going to be that good that fast. I said, what's going to happen? If Russell Wilson would have been 6'2", he'd have been the third player picked in this draft. Would have been third player picked, in that draft. And that's the way I felt. But because of his height, people, this combine crap and this overrated measurables, but the guy was a winner and he had guts. And when Seattle got him, I thought, well, Matt Flynn will play for a while, but eventually this guy's going to take that job. I didn't think it'd be, as a rookie, I didn't think he'd be a Super Bowl champion in his second year. But I honestly, I promise you on my life, I said, he will end up being the steal draft. If somebody doesn't draft him early, if he's a fifth rounder, he's gonna be laughing at the NFL in 5 years. Well, and I really believe that.
And he manages his personal life.
He is, great ones build this wall up build the wall up around them with however they do it, that allow only the right ones in. And Chuck Knox told my rookie coach in Seattle, the great Chuck Knox, said, GIGO is what he called it, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
When you allow garbage in, the only thing you can spit out is garbage. Russell Wilson does a spectacular job of not allowing garbage in. So what he spits out, what he takes in is all good. What he spits out is all good. And the result obviously bears itself out.
Okay, Sean, tell all of our listeners across the country tonight where they can check out your show and also those wonderful T-shirts.
Every damn down T-shirts. I know you hate that word, but it means you just got to play them all. You can find it there, everydamndown.com. But more importantly, I'll just do my show from 4 to 8 Eastern, obviously breaking down what happened in the first round of the draft.
Okay, and where can they go and check you out on Twitter too, Sean?
At Sean Unfiltered.
Okay, Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
so much. That, of course, has been Sean Salisbury of Yahoo Sports Radio. Stay close. Much more straight ahead. Taking you through the fastest 2 hours of radio on this Friday night. We are so glad you made it a point to join us. Hey, we want you to join us online at Twitter at eRadioSports, and also our radio website is eRadioSports.com. We've got some good stuff on there, and our next guest is always good, and I'm looking so forward to our conversation with Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. How are you, Jason?
I'm good. How are you, E?
Do you have your beautiful bride all taken care of? It is Mother's Day weekend.
I know. It's my favorite weekend of the year.
Yes, it is, because hopefully on Sunday, Sarah will get to take a long nap and you get to watch the girls, right?
The expectations just keep going up and up and up each year. And I think as a husband, you have to be careful, because with that sort of theory, you know, the sky's the limit in her eyes, but obviously, you know, there are other things to consider. You know, it's not about, I guess, the cost of the gift until you give a bad gift. Then it's certainly about the cost of the gift.
Well, I'm sure you put a lot of thought into that. Well, okay, Jason, so we got to move ahead here. We got to quickly talk about a number of topics. Of course, we want to hit on the NFL draft, but I want to get your takeaway. In hour one tonight, we were talking about the Spurs and the Portland Trailblazers, talking some NBA, but what was your thoughts on Kevin Durant? I mean, here's, you know, now the NBA's MVP, only 25 years old. I mean, just what an incredible speech that he gave. And this is obviously a young man that gets it. I mean, he has a deep, sincere appreciation, not only for his mom, but for the sacrifices that other people have made for him and around him.
Yeah, this is what the NBA needed. With all of the bad media surrounding the whole Clippers and Donald Sterling, this is what the NBA needed to put front and center. And I don't know, you probably know better than I do. Do they normally do a press conference like that for the NBA MVP, where, you know, the entire team is there? And
Maybe perhaps Kevin had requested the entire team to be there. I mean, I'm thinking back to Derrick Rose when he got his MVP. I mean, he was teary-eyed and things like that, but I've never seen an MVP speech delivered that way. I mean, it was...
Yeah, it was on the grand scale, but he delivered. You know, I think when people sometimes think of the NBA, they think that there's a lot of I, and, you know, about the individual. You know, and for many reasons, not just because I guess the characteristics, but I think just in general, you know, for a franchise or a team to be successful in any given year, you know, it's not the same as football, where you really got to be solid, you know, 11 on offense, 11 on defense, 11 on special teams to really get to, you know, that promised land of the Super Bowl, or even deep in the playoffs. But, you know, with the NBA, you have 2-3 really good top-level players. You can win a championship. And so it is a little different setup than say, what football fans are maybe used to. But Kevin Durant is you know, he's got to be, and he is, one of the shining stars in the NBA. I mean, just to, everything was about the people around him. You know, here's a guy in a league where, you know, guys are tough, and, you know, the tattoos are everywhere, and here he is. He I felt like I was watching my brother, you know, talk in front of, you know, my grandmother's 100th birthday or something like that, you know, where it's just the emotions, or at a wedding, you know, a family wedding when somebody's getting up. And, I mean, that was him up there. You know, and it just shows that it means a lot to him, and he doesn't take anything for granted, and he knows exactly who's helped him get to where he is today, and you know, really, I think having his team there said a lot as well. But certainly, you know, the words about his mother were, whether you are a basketball fan, a sport fan, whatever it may be, if you listen to that and didn't have some emotions running through you, then there's something wrong with you. You don't have to have money, right? You don't have to live on the other side of the fence or on the other side of the tracks. You know, it can come in many different shapes, sizes, forms, area codes. You know, it really doesn't matter. I think as long as you have, you know, that parental guidance and someone who is continuing to believe in you and tell you when you're doing things right and tell you when you're doing things wrong. And that's kind of the environment that I imagine Kevin Durant grew up in.
Okay, Jason Peter with us at Yahoo Sports Radio at the Big E Sports Show. Of course, next week when he's on our program, we're going to do a full breakdown of the 2014 NFL Draft. A lot of action that's been happening over the past couple of days. And right now, I did want to ask you just quickly, you know, we were talking about the NBA, but what was your thoughts on the Warriors relieving the duties of Mark Jackson, seeing them go their separate ways? I mean, this was a guy that led his team to 51 wins. I mean, how does that happen? We're seeing this become even a little bit more of a trend in the NBA. Lionel Hollins, you know, George Karl, Coach of the Year.
Yeah, and I don't even know if you could just kind of put it on the NBA. I think it's everywhere. I think it's you got to play kind of the whole game. You know, there's no aspect that any coach, I think, is really safe from. And, you know, with Mark Jackson, they say there were issues from within, you know, within ownership. Maybe he was having issues with the owner's son, and you know, these guys, these owners nowadays, they want to be so involved. You know, it used to be where owners, they just owned the team. They just wrote the checks. You know, very rarely were they even guys that sat in the arena or the stands every single night. But now it's different. It's different. These guys, just because they are, you know, the ones writing the check, they feel like they should have say, and they want to have involvement in the decision making and stuff like that. And you know, there are some guys that can make that work, but I think the majority probably can't, just because they don't have, you know, a background in sports. And there are a lot of similarities, I think, between sports and business. But, you know, I don't know if you could say just because you made one thing successful, you could make the other one successful with your involvement. So, you know, Mark Jackson, I think I don't know if it was you know, nowadays some of these GMs and upstairs management, they have their eyes on something else, and you know, they got something on the back burner before they're already done with, you know, what they're cooking on the front. And you know, I know what's his name, Kerr's name has been mentioned for like every
right.
job
Steve,
now,
mm-hmm.
and you know, maybe they feel like they've got an inside track to him.
Okay, Jason Peter has been with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We love when you connect with us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. Hey, you want to give us a quick hit on this whole fallout at Rutgers with Eric LeGrand? And now I guess he is going to speak at the school's graduation this year.
Yeah, and I was in New Jersey when this all kind of went down, and it was a little minor uproar back there. Yeah, I mean, can Rutgers do anything right? I mean, it's just embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have the one guy that I think has really brought a positive message to the university. You know, here you have him set up to speak, or you've you know, extended an invitation, and when he wakes up on Monday morning, you know, he's reading that somebody else is giving the speech. So it was certainly it didn't look professional the way that they handed it, but it's kind of, you know, right up along Rutgers Alley.
Okay, so Jason Peter has been with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. I promise we're going to do a full breakdown of the 2014 NFL draft. So much been happening over the past 24 hours, and Jason, we look forward to your perspective, your insight, and of course, we want to relive some of the memories of when you were drafted. What was in 96? I'm going off the top of my head here, right?
It was 98.
Yep, 98. All righty, time flies. Okay, Jay, we appreciate you coming on. Have a wonderful weekend with the family.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Much more straight ahead this weekend at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, and we will be right back. Okay, welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in radio. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and I cannot think of a better way to close out tonight's program than by dedicating one of our segments to the wonderful world of boxing. It has been a while since we've done that. So we have invited back to our program one of the very best in the business. He is a longtime New York Times columnist, Ira Burkow, who intimately covered boxing and interviewing some of the very best fighters in sports history, has written about them in our next conversation. So we're going to go between the ropes. We're going to get a little nostalgic, and I'm certainly looking forward to talking to Ira. Ira, how are you?
Good, Elissa. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, the last time we had you on the show, we were talking about your New York Knicks, and a lot has certainly transpired over the past, what, 5-6 months. So can you kind of give us a pulse? You're up there in New York. What in the world's going on? And we got Phil Jackson heading things up now. You got to
right.
love that.
Well, nobody's quite sure what's going on, other than that Phil Jackson signed a 6-year or 5-year contract for $12 million, and you know, the team didn't make the playoffs this year, and there's been a lot of criticism of the owner over the several years, and now so they hired Phil Jackson, and the owner James Dolan said that he is going to step away, and he doesn't know anything about basketball, and he's going to let Phil Jackson run things, and I don't know how much Phil can do. There are problems with salary caps and who they can draft and when. But if anybody could impart a winning way with this team, it would have to be Phil Jackson, because he has more rings than he has fingers. he's got 13 championship rings, 11 as a coach. So he has to fit a couple on his toes, I guess. So it's exciting time again. But meanwhile, in New York, the Brooklyn Nets are in the playoffs, and they're playing Miami. And even though they beat Miami 4 out of 4 times during the regular season,
mm-hmm.
It may not be the same kind of results this year.
You know, Ira, I'm so glad you bring up Brooklyn. What are your thoughts on the job that Jason Kidd has done as a rookie head coach?
Well, he became the first rookie head coach to win a Game 7 in
mm-hmm.
the playoffs when they beat Toronto. He's interesting. He had a young assistant coach named Frank, who had been a head coach in the NBA, and apparently they didn't get along, and he really dismissed him early on in the season. He has his own way of doing things. Jason Kidd was a great, great player, one of the great point guards of all time, And it looks like he's sort of helped resurrect Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. Got some young guys, Sean Livingston. What hurt them is that their center Brooke Lopez was injured and is not in the, not playing in the playoffs. But he was an All Star, and but they've had a very good season. He's been a really you'd have to say he's been an outstanding coach.
Well, synergy certainly counts for something, and we saw the departure of Mark Jackson with the Warriors this past week. I mean, do you anticipate that potentially going back to talking about your Knicks? I mean, do you see him perhaps going back to New York at all?
I don't think so. You know, Phil wants a coach who can teach his triangle offense. And so essentially, Phil is going to be a coach once removed into the president's office. But he will be looming over the coach. And the odds are pretty good that it's going to be Steve Kerr, who played for Phil and won four rings himself with the Bulls.
What's your what's your confidence level with him?
Pardon me?
What is your confidence level that Steve Kerr would be able to do that?
I know Steve Kerr. I covered him when he was with the Bulls, and I have a very high regard for Steve Kerr. He's a very good announcer, and he works very well with Marv Albert. But of course, everybody works well with Marv Albert. Marv Albert is so good that anyone who works with Marv Albert pretty much becomes a comedian himself, because he's such a great straight man and delivers such great straight lines to his partner. And there's nobody quite like Marv Albert.
Well, we're having a fabulous conversation with Pulitzer Prize winning author Ira Burkow. And, of course, the real reason we invited him on tonight was to promote his new book. It is titled Counterpunch. And we're going to hit on all of that here momentarily. So kind of tell us about, as far as the sport of boxing, where do you see that today? Is it thriving? Because some folks say that it's dying.
Yeah, it's not thriving. And this book, Counterpunch, is a collection of my columns and pieces for the New York Times and some other places over a period of 40 years. So it goes back to Joe Louis and Jack Dempsey all the way to Floyd Mayweather. And so I've seen the rise, and I've seen what essentially is sort of the fall of boxing. But although Mayweather still commands a lot of attention, and so a few of the other lighter weights do. But it used to be that the heavyweight champion of the world was maybe the most famous fighter, most famous athlete in the world. And that's no longer the case. People can hardly name the heavyweight champion, and turns out to be a Ukrainian, Klitschko, who seems like he has an advanced degree in physics or something, but he's 7 feet tall and he's a powerhouse, but he doesn't fight a lot in America, and his fights the coverage of it in American papers, it gets two or three paragraphs, it seems, when he has a heavyweight championship fight. So that's unfortunate. There's no Tyson, there's no Ali anymore. There's, even Holyfield or Lennox Lewis. These were, going back even farther, the Joe Louis era, Jersey Joe Walcott, and those people that just don't seem to exist anymore. And I don't know, boxing for a long time was such an important sport, and the middleweights, going back even to LaMotta and Graziano, and of course Sugar Ray Robinson and Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran, but it seems it's fewer and fewer, and other sports are taking their place in prominence. Basketball, I mean, with the playoffs, basketball wasn't this prominent 25-30 years ago. And football even has gained greater currency, and so in some ways has golf on television.
We're talking with Ira Burkow this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, highlighting some of his book. It is titled Counterpunch. Few fighters, I will say, capture the imagination quite like Mike Tyson. During your days as a sports columnist with the New York Times, I know you covered so many fights throughout the years. What was your impressions of him, and perhaps that most shocking moment? I actually did watch that fight with Tyson's bite.
Yeah, well, Tyson... Tyson is a very intelligent guy, but he seemed to have a screw loose. He was convicted of rape and spent 3 years, I think it was, in the Indiana federal state prison. And He was the youngest heavyweight champion at 20 years old, and he had an outstanding career. But I always thought that he was always getting into fights and drugs and women and crazy stuff and lawsuits and I just thought that he was going to end up one day in a gutter with a knife in his back. And it hasn't happened. And he sort of reinvented himself in recent times. He had a play about himself, one man play. There's some documentaries about him, and he makes emotional. He makes speeches, he's reinvented himself. And Ali is probably still the most famous and adored athlete in the world.
Well, it's certainly the best of the best, and I was going to ask you just talk about his influence and how he's impacted the views in our society and changed the way even people view athletes. I mean, he was certainly more than boxing's greatest champion.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when he stood up and said, I'm not going to war and against Vietnam, they never did anything to me. And then he won his suit in the Supreme Court as a conscientious objector. And a lot of people, and then, you know, he changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, and people derided that, and then pretty soon people began to accept it, and of course, nobody calls him Cassius Clay anymore, and their young people have no idea that his name was Cassius Clay, but he was sensational, because he was so charismatic, and he was a great fighter, with a stunning punch, and he was just so colorful in the ring, and he was colorful outside of the ring. And one of my, I spent a lot of time around him, and one of my fondest memories was we were on an airplane together, about to take off, and a stewardess came by and said, Mr. Ali, you have to put your seatbelt on. And he said, Superman don't need no seatbelt. and she said, Superman don't need no airplane either.
Oh yeah, it's in the book.
And the next sound you heard was click of the seatbelt.
Well, the title of the book is Counterpunch. I want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of Ira Burkow. He is one of truly the best Pulitzer Prize winning author, and it is a collection that will inform and entertain all of you diehard boxing fans. And I know we've got a lot of them right here at Yahoo Sports Radio. What a pleasure, Ira. You take care, and I look forward to your next production and having you back on the show. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alicia.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. That, of course, was Ira Burkow talking about his new book that's been released titled Counterpunch. And now, as we close out the show, we want to thank all of our guests, our lineup. You guys have been so amazing. Jeff Garcia with the San Antonio Spurs, ProjectSpurs.com. Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Our very own Sean Salisbury from Yahoo Sports Radio. And the great Ken Griffey Sr. I'm Elissa Walker Campbell, encouraging you not to drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody.